Hello and welcome back to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast, the podcast where we guide you on that path to becoming a sovereign citizen of Bitcoin. I'm Brady, and my frenemy partner co-host, Tommy, is in New York this week and working hard. We tried to connect, and you know, damn if we couldn't get a VoIP connection to work on four different services that we've tried now, from our office here in Lawrence, Kansas, to freaking Rockefeller Center, which I know has plenty of bandwidth coming into that building. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but it is something that's not related to any particular service. It's happening across quite a few of them. So Tommy had to take off to get back to work, so I'm just going to drop a solo podcast, the first solo podcast that we've done on the Citizen Bitcoin feed. There's just a lot of wonderful golden knowledge threads being dropped on Twitter over the past couple of weeks, and I think it would be great to kind of go through them and highlight those threads and bring that knowledge to all of you, as is sort of our mission here at Citizen Bitcoin, to educate about further about Bitcoin so that we have a strong community. All right, so as Bitcoin is sort of, you know, settling into the fifth month now, almost finishing up the fifth month of this bear market, and you know, Bitcoin maximalists like Kevin Pham, Udi, are calling for bear markets, extended bear markets, to sort of weed out all the tourists, to allow the developers time to focus on the protocol, to build out Lightning Network. And I think that makes good sense. We'll see what happens. That price is still sort of, you know, accumulating in this wedge shape over the last 5 months, and we'll see at some point which way it's going to go. But Bitcoin maximalists are using this time to educate on Twitter, and there's been some really great threads lately, so let's get into it. The first one I want to look at is from Menny Rosenfeld. That's at M-E-N-I, Menny Rosenfeld, on Twitter. And I'll post links to all of these threads, of course, in the show notes. So I'm going to read through the thread and talk about it. The reason blockchain is so susceptible to cargo cult mentality is that the fundamental features that make it what it is are, in a sense, invisible and inseparable from how the technology works. If I invent a new, more efficient light bulb, I can easily demonstrate that it A, gives off a certain luminance, and B, draws less power than similarly bright bulbs. Anyone can see that this demo is convincing or not convincing, and is the real deal or not. There's no knowledge of how my design work is required. If I fail to make such a demonstration, everyone knows I'm BSing. If someone says they can build up on my design and use it to improve things which are completely unrelated to light bulbs, he needs to demonstrate this or he's BSing. But the benefits of Bitcoin over traditional currencies isn't anything you can so easily measure. Even without using any of Bitcoin's innovation, I can create a system that, to the end user, will appear indistinguishable from Bitcoin, greatly outperform it, in fact. It will allow receiving tokens and sending to anyone easily and quickly with little or no fees. Of course, it will be completely centralized, and with it will come the associated risks. The system might one day shut down or start charging high fees or apply censorship. But these are things that might happen in, quote, the future. They are not things that you can observe now. The only way to distinguish the two systems is to look at how they actually work. To be convinced of Bitcoin's merits, you need to know how it works and why it is the way it is. And I'll just pause here in the middle of the thread to say, you know, underscore that this is really the mission of the podcast, and what I really appreciate about some of the other podcasts and YouTube channels and all of the great blogs out there that really focus on educating about what is Bitcoin. These sort of core developers sharing their knowledge, the kind of outer ring of maybe lesser talented developers, but people who aren't maybe not even developers at all, but have spent time and dedicated themselves to gain a technical understanding of what Bitcoin is. And I think this is what you know, if this all plays out as it, the, you know, maximalism, Bitcoin maximalists sort of investment case says that it will, then we're in this early money, still very early, 2.5% adoption around the globe. So very early smart money. And part of what that phrase smart money in the investment world is inspired by is people who acquired that knowledge, that smartness about that particular technology through work and just reading and applying and interest and curiosity. And that's the sort of ethos, the spirit of the Bitcoin community that really creates a network effect in and of itself that reinforces all of Bitcoin's other network effects. And the community is sort of this glue that ties all of those network effects together and enhances all of them as well. So it's just a big flywheel. It's extremely important, though, to get a real technical understanding, to really know what you're investing in. And I think that path is pretty common, where the path that I took as well is, you see Bitcoin a few times, it crosses your path, and then at some point there's a time where it catches your attention and something's different, and you read the whole white paper instead of just the abstract, and start just diving down the rabbit hole and eating the eat me and drink me bottles and little tea biscuits or whatever the heck it is in Alice in Wonderland are just going down nice and easy. Andreas Antonopoulos videos and reading all the Bitcoin Talk forum, historical posts, the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, the Book of Satoshi, the Internet of Money 1 and 2, the Bitcoin Standard. So these are all sort of the fundamental building blocks of Bitcoin knowledge. And you start acquiring all those and reading them and listening to them on Audible and podcasts and rereading them and re-listening to them and really starting to digest exactly what Bitcoin is, all the way from the technical aspects of it to the economic aspects, the social aspects. And it just goes from there. So this is what Manny Rosenfeld is underscoring, and I'll finish the thread up now. So the problem is most people don't understand how Bitcoin works. They know there's this thing called blockchain that somehow makes it decentralized, and they deduce that blockchain is some kind of general purpose magic powder to make anything stronger, faster, cheaper. So when they hear about this new way blockchain is being used to cure cancer and whatnot, they don't have the tools to call BS. And since the benefits of using a blockchain are not directly observable, these projects get away with not demonstrating superior performance. And the scary thing is that this charade can go on for a while. They can continue having no product at all, or a product which isn't or shouldn't be decentralized. And they can just keep saying, oh, it's based on blockchain, so it's better. And people will fall for it. The only remedy to the original cargo cult was understanding how airplanes and radio actually work. The only remedy to blockchain cargo cult is understanding how and why and when blockchains work. So extremely important to understand the depth, in depth, the technology as much as you can, and just keep pursuing that knowledge. Similarly, Jonathan Corgan, who is a Bitcoin Core developer, a researcher in machine learning, Cypherpunk, he's president at Corgan Labs. He wrote a post summing up his impression of Consensus, the Consensus 2018 conference, which happened in May, and brought together, I think something like 7,000 or 8,000 people to New York. And here is his take. My take on Consensus 2018 so far: it's like all the popular kids, blockchain, are publicly bashing the geeks and nerds. Hashing, seems appropriate, Freudian slip there. Are publicly bashing the geeks and nerds, Bitcoin, while privately trying to copy their homework. The amount of fluff and cargo cult engineering is astounding. Unrestrained incantation of buzzwords and feel-good hype does not a successful business plan make. Unless, of course, the business plan is really just a means of separating clueless people, customers and VCs alike, from their money. There has been exactly one successful use case so far for quote-unquote blockchain technology: to secure the history of ownership and facilitate the transfer of digital bearer tokens. Bitcoin has solved the problem of hard money, allowing storage and transfer of value among voluntary participants, free of restrictions imposed by third parties and devaluation and inflation of the money supply. Bitcoin uses a blockchain to secure its history, appended to by miners at cost and independently stored and validated by everyone else. There is an important independence at play here. The hard money properties of Bitcoin have resulted in users assigning value to it, and its value motivates miners to expend resources securing it. There is no central party dictating what constitutes a valid Bitcoin transfer, who can run a Bitcoin node, what software one uses to run a node, and who can be a Bitcoin miner, or how, when, or for what purpose participants can come together to transact. There is the actual meaning of the term decentralized, and all the other use cases for blockchain technology lack one or more of these features. For some people and companies, Bitcoin's hard money features are attractive, and they seek to add to the system by collaborating to offer new and better ways to interact with the Bitcoin network. Some examples: operating currency exchanges, developing wallet software, helping users to secure their Bitcoin in long-term storage, providing developer education, and creating financial derivative products to hedge risk. Some groups are working to add to Bitcoin's fundamental network protocol and properties, improving privacy, security, scalability, and usability by building on what already exists and is already valued by Bitcoin users. However, blockchain, not Bitcoin, companies with a variety of motivators see Bitcoin success and think the underlying blockchain data structure is the magic ingredient. A historical ledger secure from manipulation and censorship is indeed valuable, but has only been accomplished in Bitcoin by making it financially infeasible for anyone to attempt to deviate from the rules everyone else accepts. Miners attempting to append invalid blocks to the ledger waste their money when these blocks get rejected by validating users running Bitcoin node software. Users attempting to double spend their Bitcoins have their transactions rejected by miners. Developers writing software that doesn't conform to the Bitcoin consensus rules and users that run it find their nodes split off and unable to participate in Bitcoin economic activity at all. Miners that attempt to selectively mine transactions, ignoring ones they don't approve of, miss out on the attached transaction fees when some other miner includes those transactions in the blocks they submit to users for validation. None of these other blockchain, not Bitcoin, proposals attempting to replicate Bitcoin's success but in some other application domain captures these dynamics. They merely invoke the twin magic words, quote, blockchain and decentralized instead. This is cargo cult engineering, referencing a belief among some people who first came into contact with advanced technology that various ritualistic acts, such as the building of an airplane runway, will result in the appearance of material wealth. From Wikipedia. Sadly, there is also a contingent of people for whom the value proposition of Bitcoin or sound money is threatening, and who seek to undermine it with various proposals that diminish one or more aspects of it. Two examples: blockchain analysis companies that attempt to trace Bitcoin history to identify users or past disapproved activity, and hosted wallet companies that prevent users from actually controlling their holdings. A blockchain is nothing more than an expensive and slow database. It is a necessary but insufficient ingredient, and not even the most important one, of a system, Bitcoin, designed to provide monetary sovereignty to its voluntary participants. I expect that in 5 years, all of these blockchain, not Bitcoin companies will either go out of business, will have adapted their business model to work on top of Bitcoin, or will pivot away from something entirely unrelated to blockchain. In summary, blockchain is not this magical thing where you sprinkle blockchain dust all over a problem and it will be okay. Quoting Jimmy Song, saying it better than I ever could. Well, I think Jonathan Corrigan said it pretty darn well himself. And you can find Jonathan Corrigan on Twitter at JM Corrigan. Of course, this thread will be linked in the show notes. All right, and so there's one more thread to bring this all together and to really underline this point. The case for Bitcoin maximalism is really built upon the idea that there will only be one protocol that wins. If Bitcoin is a protocol for the transfer of wealth or value over the internet, or as Jack Dorsey has been calling it, the internet's native currency, or the internet will have a native currency, history shows that it will probably just be one protocol that wins because of network effects. That the network with this protocol that is the largest becomes the most trusted and earns the best developers, so it becomes the best technology, becomes the most used, and so forth, and all those network effects. Same thing with Bitcoin. So this is a thread from a book, or I'm sorry, I guess it was a series of slides from a presentation that a TCP/IP protocol developer named Michael Padlipsky gave back when the protocol wars were happening, and there were all kinds of private, centralized alternatives to the open source TCP/IP protocol being proposed, and by, you know, who you think would be, it would be Cisco and IBM and Microsoft all had private, centralized alternatives to the open protocol. So this just really underscores it here. This thread is from at Arbedout, A-R-B-E-D-O-U-T, on Twitter. I mentioned this quote in a tweet earlier this week. It's from a hysterical, irreverent rant, well, a series of rants, by a protocol engineer in the 80s by the name of Michael Padlipsky, in a book titled Elements of Networking Style. Padlipsky spent almost a decade of his life politely, and sometimes less politely, telling anyone who would listen that ISO was garbage and TCP was here to stay. OSI, it was a competing protocol or set of protocols, the Open Systems Interconnection Protocols, and TCP, the Transmission Control Protocol, was its main open competitor. So in today's jargon, Michael Padlipsky was a TCP maximalist. He loved working with protocols and designing them. He hated conference hopping and endless designing of specs in committee. He put this series of slides together that are pictured in the thread as part of his presentations, trying to convince engineers to abandon the dream of OSI for the reality of TCP. See, a ton of engineers in the late 70s and early 80s thought they could design something better than TCP. Naturally, they all flocked to OSI to try to implement their something better. Everybody wants to be the next Satoshi, am I right? I wonder what we would have thought about layer 2 protocols versus parachains or Telegram's end of 92 hypersharding. Wait, never mind. He covered it. In the slide, he says, layering makes a good servant but a bad master. He hated false comparisons between working protocols and marketing hype, and he called them out wherever he saw them. In this slide, Padlipsky says, if you must compare apples and oranges, don't use redness and smoothness as your criteria, unless, of course, you're deliberately trying to mislead. He understood that protocol devs aren't like traditional app developers. More isn't better. And the slide here says, it must be our great task, gentlemen, to keep the monkeys away from the typewriters. I am rereading his book, The Elements of Networking Style, in an attempt to survive Blockchain Week here in New York City. It's helping. And the slide here says, just because you're constitutionally entitled to a personal opinion doesn't mean you're constitutionally entitled to a professional opinion. P.S. I don't choose ridiculously expensive books on Amazon. Oh, we didn't read that part. So the point is that if you look back at history, there's, you know, whatever early conditions that lead to a certain protocol taking a lead and then network effects taking over and winning, we haven't seen a protocol that's got the kind of history behind it that Bitcoin has that's been overtaken. So TCP wasn't overtaken, even if OSI might have been, conceivably much better. In practice, the network effects were too strong for TCP at that point. So Bitcoin and TCP are like layer one protocols, base layer protocols. And then the Lightning Network and IP, the Internet Protocol, are second layer networks that are built on top of Bitcoin and TCP. This is the way protocols are built. You have a base layer that's very focused, that's conservative, that does a few things very well, that's secure, and doesn't change very much, and eventually ossifies after it's achieved a certain amount of usage and adoption, it will, basically stop being changed. And that's what we're seeing with Bitcoin, that you've got to, in order to maintain the integrity of the money and the integrity of the blockchain and the UTXO set, need to be very conservative with the base layer and then use a unicast or one-to-one protocol on the second layer, which is what Lightning Network is and IP is. So you can see that very nice analogy between Bitcoin and Lightning Network and TCP/IP. So if Bitcoin is a protocol for the transfer of wealth over the internet, a native currency for the internet, then it's likely that there will be one winner. And this is not, it's not correct to use Bitcoin and compare it to an investment in Google, or say we're at the early early part of the internet. It's like 1995 for the dot coms. But Bitcoin's not a company. Bitcoin's a protocol. It would have been like being able to invest in TCP in the 80s and reap the rewards when it becomes the most used protocol for the transfer of information around the entire world. So I hope that these three threads help sort of bring that whole Bitcoin maximalist view into alignment. The case for Bitcoin maximalism is very strong, and once you can start really getting into seeing why, and once you really clearly see the fundamental truths behind the Bitcoin maximalist investment case, then you really start to want to dig in and understand more. You'll have more. You might want to put more skin in the game, invest, move more of your assets or your money into Bitcoin. Don't buy many, if any, other coins at all in the crypto space, and just work as hard as you can to convert fiat dollars or fiat money into Bitcoin. And that just then reinforces your desire to learn more about it and to understand it more, and then to evangelize it, of course. Maybe even start a podcast and try to help other people learn about Bitcoin, because you just can't stop yourself. So you got to have an outlet for it. All right. Thanks for listening. And Tommy will be back next week, and we'll get him back on the show. Looking forward to that. Thank you so much for listening. All over the world, I was looking at the stats on the podcast. I'm pretty blown away. People from 50 different countries all over the world, Japan, Singapore, hello, how's it going? In Africa, I saw Namibia, Ghana, plenty of pickup in the UK and around Europe, and of course in the United States. So it's pretty cool to know that your voice is being moved around the world on that TCP/IP stack into your ears, and we're sharing all this Bitcoin knowledge. So this is the network effects. Bitcoin, the idea, will spread farther and faster because it's built on top of the internet. So pretty cool time to be around. The price is going to do its thing, but with the maximalist view, one of the great benefits of it is, you just need to be holding, you don't need to watch the price, and you just work on learning, understanding, and eventually maybe even contributing to the technology itself, or at least to educating the community and being a part of it in general. So thanks for listening. We're on Twitter at Citizen Bitcoin. Share this podcast, rate and review. I don't think we have any ratings. Reviews. We have some ratings, but I don't know if we have any reviews on Apple Podcasts. It'd be really cool if you do enjoy the show. Throw up a review there. It would really encourage us and help promote the show as well. So thanks a lot, and we will see you next week. Take care.